Good afternoon, Commissioners. This afternoon I'll be appearing as Councillor for Oasis and Basin Association. And after my presentation shortly, I will introduce three key witnesses, Mr. Goldsmith, Mr. Skelton and Mr. Brown. We've not called Andy Carr this afternoon, and I will turn at the end of my legal presentation to the reasons for that and a further summary of that evidence. Now, if it may please the Commission, I don't intend this afternoon to read through the legal submissions pre-lodged. Rather, I intend to talk to some specific key points of those submissions and highlight some matters which I understand were raised this morning by Council for the Middleton submission. So,
just a moment. May I have lost them, but I haven't. Previous lodge submission, did they come in?
Yes,
not
that was the I emailed you about it yesterday, didn't I? The 28th, I think, of last month.
Oh,
yeah,
they
did the 27th of July.
Yes. So yes. I was otherwise tied up around them. So I probably missed it completely, but if they were emailed to me, I'll find them. That's okay.
Sure. Right, well, if there's any matters that you want further clarification on the submission, I'm happy to take the panel through that. I submit to the panel that the case before the Commission in respect of the submitter's proposal, the Middleton proposal, is relatively a simple case in respect of Oasis's concerns. What the Commission has before it is agreed landscape evidence from Council and service submitters as to the location and appropriateness of the ONL boundary categorisation. The Middleton submitters have elected not to call any landscape evidence, and therefore that leads to the immutable assumption on their case that there will be adverse landscape effects. However, the case is almost solely therefore predicated upon the application and responsiveness required under the NPS urban development. I've highlighted in the beginning of my legal submission the Oasis position in respect of the whole of the Middleton rezoning. I intend that Mr. Goldsmith will talk the panel through that position further in his presentation. So the intent of my legal summary today is to take the panel through what I consider to be some of the particular deficiencies in the Middleton case. I therefore refer the panel to paragraph 9 of my legal submissions, which offers three fundamental aspects of the submitter's case report. The first being that the land subject in Middleton submission is part of an urban environment for the purposes of the NPS-UDC. The second being that the evidence supports the case that the NPS requirements are triggered, and therefore a planning response is required. And finally, that in this case, the NPS should trump all other considerations, including landscape considerations. Now, I had intended to present mostly to the second and third aspects of those submissions, but I understand one matter raised this morning from Council for the submitters was in respect of the definition for an urban environment. In my submissions, I have detailed why I consider that first and foremost there is a fallacy in the Middleton argument, being that the land the subject of this rezoning is not considered within the Council's definition of an urban environment. Council for Middleton this morning submitted that the interpretation of the NPS is such that policies PA1 to PA4, which are about the necessity to provide for sufficient capacity at any one time, apply not only within the defined area of an urban environment, but entail greenfield development as well, perhaps outside of that. In response to that submission, twofold, as I've already stated, the Oasis submissions present the alternative proposition in detail that, in respect of the NPS, either the need for the NPS requirements not triggered, and the fact that NPS is not the only matter which might trump other considerations. I'll turn to those matters in detail soon. But perhaps somewhat academically and in direct response, I note the preamble to policies PA1 to PA4 states that those policies apply to an urban environment that is expected to experience growth. I acknowledge as well that the preamble to other policy suites within the NPS actually is quite different. The tenor of those subsequent policy suites specifically states that those policies are not restricted to the boundaries of an urban area. Now, I appreciate that an urban area and an urban environment have different conditions, but I also submit that perhaps it's relevant that that preamble wording is not included within policy suite PA1 to PA4. Perhaps that is an indication of the legislative intent that PA1 to PA4 apply within the bounds of an urban environment so defined. Irrespective of that definition, and whether in fact the council's aggregation of different urban areas to constitute a Queenstown urban environment is correct, I think it's perhaps somewhat academic for this proposal. As I go on to explain in page 3 of my legal submissions pre-lodged, the core aspect as well that I feel with respect to this case is that there must be an evidential case established that there is a need under the NPS which triggers a requirement for responsive planning. The NPS is a responsive planning document, is reactive to there being a need established, therefore directing the planning response. In paragraphs 12 to 16, I have detailed the critique from Mr. Geddes as to the council's flood capacity modelling evidence presented, and I submit that whilst interesting, that critique does not present an alternative quantitative or qualitative analysis as to what the DCM evidence might suggest. I therefore submit that before the panel, the flood capacity modelling evidence of the council must be accepted in this instance, and that provides the conclusion that there is sufficient development capacity in accordance with the NPS requirements in the short, medium and long term with respect to residential dwelling needs. With respect to the third contention, and I refer back again to paragraph 9 of my submission in C, about the NPS trumping all other considerations. I understand that point raised in Council's legal submission this morning was that the evidence for the submitter is that Section 16 matters do not trump other considerations such as the NPS and the needs of the greater community to provide for social and economic well-being. In response, I submit that neither is the converse true, NPS nor does it trump Section 16 matters, and in fact what we have before us is not a question of trumping at all. As detailed in my legal submissions, and as set out in the Council's opening legal submissions and the Section 42A report on common themes, there are a multitude of statutory considerations and other planning assessment matters relevant in the context of the district plan review. I submit that the NPS urban development capacity is one such consideration, but in this instance, there is also the need to consider part two, the higher order objectives of the PDP, higher order objectives and policies contained within higher order planning instruments such as the RPS and proposed RPS. I don't think the panel needs to be taken through the legal construct to arrive at that conclusion, which has been detailed in Council's opening legal submissions as well, but the basic premise for that proposition is that, in my submission, this district plan review is quite different from that scenario of King Salmon subsequently appealing Wanaka and Dunpoint Station, where one can rely on the settled objectives of a settled planning instrument. In this instance, in the context of the DPR, we are going through the process of setting those objectives, and therefore broader matters of consideration are relevant. I'm also not aware of any authority that has applied king salmon ratio directly to the district king that you process as a get.
Couldn't we look at it more simply than that? The general requirement is that we decide what the status of the landscapes are first before moving on to zoning. The NPS is only applicable when you move on to zoning. Doesn't that mean that giving effect to the NPS means you then do that in accordance with your determination as to whether it's an outstanding natural landscape or not?
Your determination of the most appropriate zoning, having already established your landscape line, I think is broader than looking at whether that implements a particular national instrument at hand in the context of the district plan review.
I don't disagree with that, but I think in terms of the NPS itself, it comes in the stage two part rather than the first thing. In other words, you don't say the NPS means we have to zone land and here's some bare land.
No, I agree.
I sort of put the question to Ms. McDonald this morning in a rather different way, but it's the same sort of thing.
In any event, even if it were to be found that in the implementation of the NPS, other relevant part two matters for consideration and the rezoning request weren't relevant, I have detailed in my legal submission that having assumed that the NPS has been promulgated in accordance with part two and gives effect to part two, when one looks at the policies of that instrument, I believe that there is also decision making to be made within those policies as to the costs and benefits of where further urban development might go. And that would lead to a weighing and balancing of, in the case might be, Section 6B considerations. In particular, in that respect, I refer to my submissions at paragraph 24 and a detailed analysis of policy PA4B, which talks about the benefits and costs of urban development at a national, interregional, regional and district scale, as well as the local effects. The latter part of my submissions talks about perhaps what might be a future inevitability in this district. If the NPS is so to be interpreted in the future that Queenstown can never stop growing and it gets to a point where that need, which was my second point in section 9 of my submissions, is triggered, then Queenstown might have to face a conversation which will see urban development encroaching upon Old Alps. And as I referred to already, that will be a considered analysis of the policies of the NPS. As I submit again, and in the round, my submission, that need is not triggered in this instance. That is the tenor of my submissions on NPS urban development, and I now want to provide a brief overview of the evidence to be presented for OASIS. OASIS is called Landscape, Traffic and Planning Expert Evidence, and is also called Mr. Goldsmith as a representative of the association. I understand this morning that the Middleton submission expressed concern that the landscape evidence may have gone beyond the mandate of OASIS and its constitution. In response, I submit that Mr. Skelton's expert witness role is important to keep in mind, and he is bound by the code of conduct in this respect. He has been called by OASIS to prepare landscape evidence in respect of the effects that might accrue from the Middleton submission, and I believe it was within his mandate and his requirements to the panel to provide relevant matters to assist your decision making. I see no issue with the evidence that has been presented on this basis. Briefly, in my opening, I referred to the evidence of Mr. Carr, and I reiterate that OASIS has elected not to call all the cows back known to present evidence for this hearing. One of the concerns expressed in the OASIS submission was the landscape and visual amenity effects on the Ohanau, which would result from the proposed roading link rising from 4.5 roundabout up to the highest point of the proposed LDR zone. The limited purpose of the very short evidence in chief of NDCAR was twofold. Firstly, to comment on the potential extent of earthworks which would be needed to construct the road, and secondly, to comment on the existing available alternative traffic route if the LDR zone was confirmed through the Taka Beach Road for State Highway 15 section, noting its current constraints but also noting an announced upgrade by the NPTA in the future. The evidence which has been lodged in relation to traffic X of the proposed zoning demonstrates that no assessment has been carried out, which would indicate that the Hawthorne Drive roundabout could accommodate traffic from this proposed rezoning. That uncertainty may have been exacerbated by evidence presented this week in respect of the Frankton Flats form submitted. The rebuttal evidence from Ms. Wendy Banks for the council continues to oppose this proposed rezoning due to uncertainty about the capacity of the Hawthorne Drive roundabout. Ms. Banks also opposes Mr. Carr's suggestion that the Taka Beach Road route is appropriate as the only road exit, without challenging, on this note, Mr. Carr's assessment that an upgrade of that intersection by NPTA would address the present constraints. There may be also a question as to whether the Commission has the jurisdiction or ability to provide for this new proposed roading link, even if the LDR zoning is confirmed. OASIS is willing to leave that determination of this issue up to the Commission without presenting any additional evidence.
Can I just clarify then? Are we to ignore Mr. Carr's evidence that was pre-lodged?
I think the evidence can be taken as read. If the Commission has any follow-up questions, I'm happy to put those to Mr. Carr, and those can be provided to the Commission by written reply if that's suitable.
To introduce yourself and connect reading the summary from paragraph 2. Commissioners, in my evidence in chief, I identify the location of our family home. Our property is not affected in any way by the development proposed in the Brisbane submission. So this hearing is limited to the values and potential of Lake Johnstone as a piece of oasis in the middle of Watson Basin. Those values and potential are detailed in evidence in chief. Many people visit Lake Johnstone, and some do so on a regular basis, to enjoy the existing peaceful ONL values of Lake Johnstone and its surrounds. While a lack of pegs or poles on the ground makes it difficult to ascertain the exact extent of future development, There is no doubt that the extent of our yard that have been proposed was to give us such rebuttal evidence as a result of the houses overlooking and clearly visible from much of the surface of Lake Johnson and the public esplanade reserve at the northern end of Lake Johnson. This is demonstrated in the photographs attached to my rebuttal evidence. I believe that development would significantly adversely affect the RNL values and the experience of people enjoying those RNL values while visiting Lake Johnson. The Roxby Basin has increasingly been developed and will continue to be developed to a significant extent. I believe it is very important that some areas in close proximity to people who live in and visit the basin with values such as the RNL values of Lake Johnson and its surrounds should be protected for the benefit of existing and future generations. I believe the construction of the proposed road will lead from the dry Hawthorne Drive roundabout to the high point in the proposed LDR zone would create a significant scar on the RNL landscape, which would be clearly visible from many public and private vantage points to the south. Oasis has no difficulty with the development of those areas of land subject to the Middleton submission, which are not located in the RNL, and which are areas of terrace very suitable for development. Those areas actually comprise most of the Middleton land that's subject to the Middleton submission, as almost all of the RNL land subject to the Middleton submission is owned by the Hanson Family Partnership. I'm wondering just at that point, stop commissioners in the 31 attachments being handed out. I'd just like to explain a little bit more, just so there's no misunderstanding. What I've handed around is it's one of the attachments to Mr. Geddes's evidence in chief, which is exactly as he produced, except not the three black crosses in the middle. Just to make sure that my point I'm making is understood, and as I said, the evidence in chief, if you look at Lake Johnson, left hand top left on the corner, a vertical line goes up, straight up, a cadastral boundary. There's a funny little triangle of Crown Land, and then the line keeps going up with Hanson Family Partnership on the right and Middleton on the left, and then there's another funny little piece of Crown Land, and then there's the orange line that goes up to Tucker Beach Road, with existing water residual zone on the right hand side and the Middleton orange stripy land on the left. Now, everything to the right, basically everything to the right of that vertical line, excluding the two little bits of Crown Land, is Hanson Family Partnership land.
And in fact, because the on top of the legal description in each case, it seems Hanson.
Yes.
I hadn't noticed that before, but I had now.
So, if we then look at this LDR zoning map, there's two areas. There's one on the right surrounded by the red boundary, and one on the left surrounded by the yellow boundary. The only difference between the two being a height, 5.5 metre height control in the red. But you can see from this map that almost the entire area surrounded by the red boundary is Hanson Family Partnership. A little bit piece right in the middle there where there's a little bit of development on the Middleton land surrounded by red. But the red's Hanson and the yellow is Middleton. Now, unfortunately, none of these maps have the undisputed ONL boundary. But looking at this map, go right to the top left hand. The top right hand corner of this plan is the figure north, and there's a line coming down diagonally. There's a case called HAL Properties Limited, which set the RNL boundary coming around the hillside about that line. It goes straight across Hanson Road and runs along the red line at the southern end of the existing rural residential zone. If you look at the contour lines, there's a very good reason for that, because there's a very steep fall. That residential zone is quite steeply sloping. And the red lines at the top of runs on the top of a fairly steep slope. And the RNL line goes along between goes right along the rural residential zone downward. Then it kicks to the left, along that little bit of red, and goes across and kind of circles round, and it includes the three black X's three terraces. You can tell by the contour lines that they're almost flat. And the Owendale line loops around kind of along the green line, just underneath, a little underneath the first black X, and then it winds up that escarpment, that cross-hatched, blue cross-hatched escarpment, and goes around the left-hand black X. So basically, the three areas marked with the black X, the three flat terraces, are outside the Owendale.
Just comparing the planning map boundaries, it seems that that X on section 40 is in the bottom, but it seems that the ONL runs around and takes half of section 40 up.
It takes the lower, the southern, see where those contour lines are?
Yes.
Yes, it kind of curls around the bottom of those contours.
And picks up that front of trees.
Yeah.
Yes.
So most of section, so probably three quarters of section 40 is outside the ONL.
Yes.
All of 41 is outside the ONL, and all of 24 is outside the ONL. Basically. Yes. So, effectively, the only bit of middle of the land inside the ONL is that kind of strip to the right hand side there that the yellow boundary goes around. Oasis has no difficulty at all with development of the three plateaus with the black X on. It's outside the ONL. They're down on lower terraces, quite frankly, hidden away in the back end of nowhere. There's very few places you can see those terraces from. As I stated in the solutions, Oasis is only concerned about the ONL. In my opinion, those three areas are actually ideally suited to rural lifestyle type development. And Oasis will actually encourage that rezoning, and I'll be blunt from a purely practical point of view. Arnold Wilkins, an old time farmer developer, who's older than me, has been developing around Tucker Beach Road for the last 20 or 30 years. He's done most of that development along Tucker Beach Road. And my feeling is that if you got that RR designed area that had been developed and the rest was turned down, you wouldn't have great incentive to lodge an appeal. And that development.
That's more strategic thinking.
I'm being completely blunt here. If you got most of what you wanted, you probably wouldn't appear probably here. Whereas those three areas of three black X's are kind of sitting out there looking fairly obvious in terms of being outside the ONL. Also, quite frankly, if it was a zone boundary, an RR zone boundary along the ONL boundary, the reasons expressed a couple of days ago, it kind of cements the ONL, makes it a harder barrier to get through. Just looking at that plan and a couple of other comments. Above the three X's is the blue hatched area. That's our orange, the orange hatched proposed rural residential zone. I listened with interest this morning to the legal debate, the other factor relevant to all of this is this, is that the boundary of the Wakatipu Basin study is the ONL boundary. So, I listened to the exchange this morning about the ONL boundary, about the basin study and possible variation. So, the current boundary of the Washington Basin study basically includes the three black X's, those three terraces, and the proposed RR zone. I was interested in the approach taken this morning because it seems to me that if, in fact, the variation, and I'll say the variation because we've been told it's going to be done by September or October, although there's nothing officially out there, should that variation follow the council's minute and exclude those areas from the variation, then the Middletons have had their only chance. Like they've had this hearing, they get their land rezoned, and if they're left out of the variation, then they will stand or fall on the evidence that has been presented. Which is kind of what I'm going to back on, because the land that could be the village is quite suitable for development, and it was, from the Oasis point of view, served to strengthen the OEL boundaries and further protect Lake Johnston. As a matter of interest, I note the orange hatched land, which, if you look towards the left hand end under the proposed residential zone, contains 18 hectares. That's the same figure as was in the original submission. You get evidence that that would produce potentially 45 lots. Interestingly, 18 hectares at 4,000 square metres per minimum lot size is exactly 45 lots. No allowance for roading, no allowance for the green corridor, roading corridor at the right hand end, which has been now been taken out. So in fact, you wouldn't get 45 lots out of that area. There's no allowance for topography or access or anything else. It will be somewhat less than 45. Probably not a huge amount, maybe 40 or 35. But then if you look at the three X's, they would probably, if they were zoned RR as well, they would increase the developable area by, looking at that plan, maybe 40%, maybe something like that. So 40 lots plus 40% is maybe 55, 60, 60 lots. I think if the whole area was zoned RR, you'd probably end up with about 60 lots at minimum 4,000 square metres. That's just looking at the facts and the figures up there, I'm just throwing those figures on the table. There's one other interesting thing I'd like to draw to your attention in relation to this plan, and I was interested this morning when you requested proposed rules be delivered by tomorrow, with leave reserved to Oasis to apply by the middle of next week. I wonder how much thinking has gone into this zoning. I draw your attention to the proposed main road access, the blue line coming off Tucker Beach Road. Now that road is supposedly going to provide the main access for an LDR zone containing 1,000 houses. That requires putting in the road reserve, 8.5 metre carriageway, double footpaths, and all of the things that go along with a road servicing 1,000 houses. Its location is interesting because it's right, just about right on the boundary between two potential developers. And from the yellow Middleton developer's point of view, it's what's called a single loaded road. It's got development on one side of it, not on the other side of it. Developers hate single loaded roads, just like hotel developers hate single loaded corridors. Because you want, if you're going to spend money on roading or corridors, you want to have development on both sides of it to pay for. You have to ask yourself, if Middleton developed, even if you got this zone, the left-hand X inside the yellow can't go down that escarpment, would have to go north to Tucker Beach Road. The other two X's could well go north to Tucker Beach Road. So why would Middleton build the maxi 8.5 metre carriageway almost on that boundary of the Middleton property? Likewise, if you were the Hanson Road, the Hanson Family Partnership, whoever bought that land to develop it, the red land, why on earth would you build two roads? You'd either go north, you come up from Tucker Beach Road and come up that blue road up towards the top and stop and feed out, or you do the road from Hanson from State Highway 6 and come over the top and come down to the point where it loops in the middle and stop there. Why anybody would build those two roads is kind of beyond me. And I don't know how any zoning would ensure that outcome. Probably not insoluble. If the zoning was created and there was a structure plan with required road links and appropriate rules, I'm not sure whether that's what you're going to get by the end of tomorrow. I just highlight the fact that I just struggle to see what kind of thinking has gone in or sits in behind from a practical point of view, the suggestion that someone's going to make that building this big blue road from Tucker Beach Road through to the Hawthorne Drive Avenue. Not a lot of logic, or developed logic, certainly behind that suggestion. Anyway, returning to my written summary in the middle of that paragraph, OASIS would encourage the zoning of that non-ONL land, particularly if provision is made to ensure public access from Tucker Beach Road to the Public Esplanade Reserve in the building of the Lake Johnson, in order to encourage a greater degree of access to and enjoyment of Lake Johnson. One of the primary purposes or objectives of OASIS is to get as many people visiting Lake Johnson, and enjoying it as they reasonably can. And if the rural residential zoning that I've promoted was confirmed, that there were provisions requiring, as I suggested, my primary evidence requiring consideration of public access through from Tucker Beach Road to the Public Esplanade Reserve, or that funny strip of Crown Bank, then you would have a community, potentially 60-odd new houses in the zone. There's existing residents over there. They would all have pedestrian and cycling from the access through Lake Johnson, and then there's potential for a big round and connecting through the Hanson Road right past Lake Johnson. And that being part of OASIS's primary objectives, OASIS would encourage a zoning that could enable that outcome in the future. So the paragraph 8, I support rural residential development of these non-ONL terraces for the following reasons. That development density addresses the sewage disposal constraint identified in Council's infrastructure evidence, because on-site disposal is easy to achieve on 4,000 square metre lots, particularly on terraces such as those terraces. Can I digress, Commissioners, again from personal knowledge and experience? These terraces beside the Shotland River are almost invariably river terraces. They've been left as the river cuts down. They're almost invariably gravel. There's almost invariably metres and metres of gravel below the terrace top. Arthur's Point, which is just around the corner, most of Arthur's Point, which sits on a terrace, was originally consented and zoned with no reticulated sewage and minimum 800 square metre lot sizes, because on the terraces around here you could do on-site disposal from 800 square metres, not 4,000. You know, 30 metres of gravel to drain into, it's easy. So sewage disposal, unlikely to be any problem. Second reason, the small amount of traffic which would be generated by RR zoning, 60 lots, maybe not huge. The zoning and development of the non-ONL middle land would have limited impact on the Tucker Beach Road SH6 intersection, thereby addressing the second difficulty with the Middleton submission, which was traffic access on the intersections. And the third reason was the obstacle I said before, that would probably help protect the ONLs. Paragraph 9, I note that Dr. Marion Reed supports some development of the non-ONL land adjoining and adjacent to Tucker Beach Road, but at a rural lifestyle density, 2 hectare average, rather than rural residential density, which is 4,000 square metre minimum. I disagree with that because I believe RL density is an inefficient use of land suitable for rural development living. That's an issue that should be debated before another hearing screen. Commissioner Nugent will be aware we have this rural lifestyle zone, which is a historical anomaly, dates back to subdivision of ancient 4 hectare, 10 acre lots. Submissions have been presented and evidence have been presented to an earlier hearing stream that it's a historical anomaly and that it's quite inefficient. And if you're arguing the zone and area around, like I've been talking about for rural lifestyle living, which could take 55 or 60 lots, why would you only enable 10 or 15? Then, just in response to three issues of the Middleton presentation this morning, at paragraph 17 of the legal submissions, Ms. McDonald records a key concern for the submitter, and I quote, that a significant proportion of development opportunities are located in more dispersed, high-priced areas that do not cater for a growing proportion of the residential population. In my opinion, that outcome is exactly what would occur if this ONL land were to be rezoned to LDR. Just just to explain that if this zoning would confirm the land that would go through the roof, expensive to develop, with the roading and the sewage and the water, that's sloping, lacing, carved land, it's rock, which adds expense to development. It's, if you've been on it, north-facing, sunny, sloping, looking at Coronet Peak. It would be of a quality, in my personal opinion, equal to Golden Heights. The good land on Golden Heights. So, if it did happen, it would be a high-priced subject. It would not be housing for those who cannot afford what Queensland's producing. It will be housing for the rich. Just because of its location, topography, and its basic values. So that's exactly the outcome which this one is expressing concerns about. And we're answering a question from Christmas. From the Commission is to get us commented on ownership of land and made a statement to the effect that a part of the Council's identifiable, realisable capacity is reliant on only a few landowners releasing land for development, and commented that this is obviously a mistake. In my opinion, what the Littleton submission proposes is a continuation of exactly that pattern, bearing in mind that the majority of the owner land is owned by the Hanson County Partnership. The Hanson family is a long time farming family in the Waitakere Basin. That's 1860s. That's a very long time. I can show you a little stone dairy on our property with old Hansons who have scrawled things on the wall in 1873. The submitted Littleton have no control over development or release of this land that is designed. There's no evidence from the landowners doing the intention to develop. There's no basis for any assumption that the land will be developed and released any faster than any other land in a similar kind of ownership. And funny enough, commissioners, the only other landowner who falls with that category, which is the Mead family, which owns Deer Park Heights and all of the residential zone, and they're a long time family and they're not in a hurry to sell. So I'm not quite sure how this zoning achieves the concern expressed by the Senate. And finally, Mr. Geddes made two or three references that there's a climb over a gate to be able to enjoy the public access down to Lake Johnson. That is about to be remedied by the installation of either a sty or a self-closing pedestrian gate. Can you testify to that, Commissioner, because I'm paying for it. I actually approached the Travels Trust and said, I keep watching people climbing over the gate. If you've been up near the Hanson Road, there's a fence and a gate across the legal road, and the gate's locked. The reason is that the gate used to be a gate that you could unlock and you could drive down the level road, but there's a swampy hollow and people getting stuck and ringing the farmer and having to track or pull the bag out of the hollow so the farmer put a padlock on the gate so people wouldn't keep driving down the level road. And at the moment, you actually do have to clamber over a little gate. And I approached the Charles Trust and said, basically, it's a council public road, you put in a style or one of those sub-open pedestrian gates and send me the bill on the paper. And it was supposed to be about 2 months ago, and the work would have been undertaken by now, except it's a small amount of work that's stuck in the contractors to do this. He's sent me 3 miles promising me that it'll be done imminently. Thank you very much for your questions.
Mr.
McCook,
do you photograph image. The images of the back of Mr. Skelton.
So I can't go you look at the photograph. This is my photograph?
No, it's Mr. Skelton's image.
You can attach a number at the top right.
Maybe I should ask Mr. Skelton a question rather than
this is one of the R&L boundary.
Yeah. No, it should be only three. Yeah, it's only three.
Image three, yes. looking at it.
Where did the OEL boundary go? There. Is that Littleton that I'm looking at? It's outside of the OEL boundary. The LBL, the proposed LB there.
This one next,
that's, yeah, right here, I started that. That's looking across the land sort of to the north and northeast.
I think probably that's better than Mr. Skelton. The left hand, looking at image three, the left hand half of the yellow is Hanson Family Partnership coming down to that clump of trees, that sort of clump of trees in the middle is just a bit on the boundary between the two. The boundary goes up, I think they've only got, it's either through those trees or just to one side of those trees. And the right hand yellow is Middleton Land.
Is that where the three terraces are?
If you go right to the right hand end, one of the terraces is in behind those trees, right to the right hand end. And the middle bit is. Yes, it climbs. You can kind of see it on the right hand half of the yellow horizontal. There's a kind of in the middle, there's kind of a flat line, there's a trench running through there, and there's kind of quite the O and L about the proposed LBR climbs up quite a steep area up behind. But broadly, left hand half is Hanson, right hand half is middle.
And the O and L boundary sort of going around that. But so that much, and that's high, isn't high ground? So of course, the base of that high ground.
The O&L boundary is actually, if you go back to the previous page, image one, sorry, two pages earlier, you can kind of see on image one, the O&L boundary comes up from the bottom, it goes round to the right, it goes round the top terrace. And then below the top is a very steep escarpment that goes down. And there's a second terrace. And then it goes down again, there's a third terrace. So those green terraces are most of my three X's.
So the ONL boundary beyond them. And that's a helicopter view, and the tree is basically taken down by the road.
I'm going to let Mr. Skelton explain, but I think just looking at this image three, the yellow goes a bit too high. I think the yellow now is actually a bit lower down because it's on the back of that terrace. So I don't think it goes up quite as high as the yellow does.
Kind of ask Mr. Skelton if he's happy about it, though.
Yeah. We might be being a little bit unkind to the buildings with that yellow there, but possibly.
Do you have any questions? I'm just going to look so bad.
Questions. around.
Let's give you a look back.
Hopefully. My first commission, I'll now call Skelton to present a summary of his landscape plan.
My evidence in chief considers mission number 338 in three parts. Whether the notified outstanding natural landscape category in relation to that part of the land subject to the submission is located within the notified ONL, whether that's correct. The effects of rezoning the site low density residential, and the landscape effects of establishing a road between Franklin Road and Hawthorne Road roundabout and the site. My brief in respect to A and B above is limited to the parts of the proposed low density residential zone located within the ONL as notified in the PDP site, and I have not considered the parts of the proposal outside the ONL boundary since preparing my evidence in chief. I have read Dr. Marion Reed's rebuttal evidence dated July 7th. The site is part of a glacier-overridden alluvial terrace landscape which holds a strong natural rural character. The proposed residential activities would take place over a series of land parcels on north-facing slopes near Lake Johnson. A road is also proposed which would cut into the south-facing slopes near the foot of Fairy Hill, crossing the undulating topography south, east, and north of Lake Johnson. The landscape category part of my evidence. And my evidence in chief assessed the landscape category under the amended Pigeon Bay factors, and I found that the site is part of a highly legible glacier overridden landform. A significant feature in this landscape is Lake Johnson, which rests in an elevated position between two large mountain forms. The landscape exists between areas with rural, being the areas to the north of the landform, and urban, being the Franklin Flats area south of the valleys. From the rural north, the site's open character and dominant pastoral cover provides an open rural context, often acting as the funnest piece of views towards the Remarkable Mountains, especially as viewed from the Little Road corridor. From the urban south, being the Franklin Flats, the site contributes to a sense of an open rural character and an awareness of the dominant surrounding lake and mountain landscape, which give the Waukupu Basin and the wider district much of its aesthetic value. Lake Johnson is hidden from views as experienced from the greater parts of the landscape. Its isolated qualities gives it a sense of remoteness that, while being close to an urban environment, can be experienced without the visual interference of the built form. Lake Johnson holds a sense of place which is unique in its proximity to the more urban environments of Franklin Flats. The site's pastoral activities and open grasslands are strongly associated with cultural understandings of place, while the few patches of indigenous scrubland exhibit the site's ecological context. Those are generally located within the incised counties. Lake Johnson holds significant recreation values which are shared and widely recognized. I consider that the site is part of an ONL. It is the northern ONL boundary that submission number 338 seeks to realign to a minor extent. I consider that the PDP ONL boundary east of Hanson Road is more robust and defensible interpretation of the northern ONL boundary than that shown in the operative district plan. I do not support the relief sought by the submitter to realign the ONL boundary. Dr. Reed and I are in agreement as to the appropriate location of this boundary. And just to speak to that, I think that the PDP proposed boundary takes into account existing development patterns and topography and vegetation patterns, more so than the DODP line does. The proposed LDR zone within the LDR. The submission seeks to establish a LDR zone in the O&L above and to the east of Lake Johnson, as well as on the lower slopes to the north and northwest of the lake. These slopes are highly visible throughout much of the Wachusett Basin. Despite a high degree of openness, despite a high degree of openness, they act as a frontispiece to views of the remarkable mountains. They display a high degree of openness, so they form an open character to those to the mountains beyond. I consider that the development of the scale proposed would have very high adverse effects on the character and quality of the O&L, as it would enable built development to cloak and modify legible landforms, resulting in a significant loss of landscape of the landscape's rural and natural character. I also consider that the relief sought would result in very high adverse effects on the natural open character of Lake Johnson. Furthermore, the visual amenity as experienced from public and private places north and northeast of the site would be adversely affected to a moderate to high degree, as the type of development proposed would detract from views of the dramatic mountains beyond it. Assessment of the proposed access roads, so now we're moving to the southern catchment. The proposal seeks to establish an access road from the Franklin Road Hawthorne Drive roundabout, crossing the elevated slopes facing elevated south-facing slopes between Ferry Hill and Lake Johnson, then crossing Hanson Road near the site's high point and entering the proposed low-density residential zone. This road would be widely visible in public from public and private places. Would likely be urban in appearance, being curved channel, and in places would require significant cuts into the landform. I consider this road would degrade the rural character and natural values of the O&L. These south-facing slopes provide an open rural context to rapidly urbanizing areas of Franklin. I consider the open rural character and natural values of the site will be more widely recognized as the valley floor urbanizes. I consider that the proposed access roads would have moderate to high adverse effects on the landscape's quality and character and visual amenity, as experienced from the public and private places, including Hanson Road, and that there is very limited capacity to avoid, remedy, or mitigate these adverse effects. Conclusion: the submission is for the rezoning of a portion of rural land and low-density residential of two road low-density residential, and the establishment of a road between Franklin Road and Hawthorne Road roundabout in the site. I consider the effects of this relief on the O&L portions of the landscape. I consider the O&L category boundary as notified in the PDP to be a robust interpretation of the landscape boundary. I also consider LDR-type development within the O&L would have a very high adverse effect on the quality and character of the landscape and on the visual amenity. Finally, I also consider that the proposed access road would have moderate to high adverse effects on the quality and character of the landscape and the visual amenity. Is there any questions for the clarify?
Well, just go back to that. Element 3 in your.
Yes. Yes, looking at that, I think that the yellow bit on the far right-hand side is too high because if you look at my attachment A, you can see there's a terrace there that's very flat terrace that's held with vegetation, and I have brought that yellow line up too high. It's now, in that image, it's looking like it's on the slopes above that terrace, so it could be brought down roughly one-third of the way between it and the Pascal. Fields that you see in the foreground.
Mm-hmm. So it's still be a strip of urban character development from that viewpoint.
The strip of urban development from that viewpoint would generally be furthermore to the left if you're looking at what's in the O&L. That's where I think the effects would be.
I can see the one on the left there, but even towards the right, if you want. From bringing that yellow down by about a third of the site.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some of it.
Now, I believe there's, isn't there, I think there's an escarpment protection area. Isn't this part of the escarpment protection that they've done?
There's still some development above there. Mm-hmm. In the bottom corner.
Yeah, it goes up beyond, it actually crosses this gully. So it moves across that gully. And then it goes up on the slopes below.
There'd be some
within the LNL here as well. You see the big gully that comes between with the Queenstown Hill and what's this one called? The hill to the right is a gully. The low density residential zone proposed crosses that, just distinctly comes across it with a straight line. And so the development on Queenstown Hill, pretty much where I've shown that yellow line would be visible in the outstanding natural landscape.
And is that okay?
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Well, why is your, this viewpoint probably isn't as representative of the effects as the view from Lowell's Road would be.
No, where is that? What is that road? Where is that?
This is Lower Shotover Road.
Yes,
the yeah. So I think if you look more at my image 2, being attachment C, you see the open pastoral landscape acting as the funnest piece to those views of Remarkables.
Yes.
And that's where my consideration is that urban development would take away that open landscape context or low density residential type development. Would remove that foreground and remove the contextual character. Okay. With image 3 then?
Well, it was just, it is going to be, there is going to be development visible here.
The stuff below the ONL, the existing development, sure.
But that makes a difference.
Well, there's already an existing pattern of development that's been established that is less dense than that proposed, and you can see that below the yellow line on my image 3. So that does set a bit of a context, but as that starts to creep up, again, you're balancing both the effects of the more rural environment to the north and then how it can spill over into the effects when you're in the ONL itself, being Lake Johnson. So if it were to creep up to that area that's in the yellow, yes, I consider the effects there would be moderate. But then when you're looking at it from Little Row, the effects would then increase as you get to see more and more of the low density residential development and in different contexts and frames.
Have you assessed Mr. Dalton's proposal for rural residential zoning on the three terraces?
I haven't been, that wasn't part of my brief, no.
Okay. And what about rural lifestyle?
In the outstanding natural landscape? No, I just assessed it. The submission, yes.
So your assessment is solely related to what is in the open out, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So is it to determine where the open out was, if the PDP was appropriate, and then assess what the effects of any development within the open out would be?
Commissioners, if I may, following that dialogue, I suggest that Oasis lodge an amended attachment 3 on behalf of Mr. Skelton to show the more appropriate location of that yellow highlighting.
Yes.
Would that be most appropriate to be lodged with the response to information being lodged by the person next week?
Yes, thank you. I don't think it's a big issue, but just for
the record.
Just for the record.
Yes, for the We'll now call Mr. Brown to hear and read out his summary statement. Perhaps you could introduce yourself and
commence
your summary from paragraph 3.
Thank you. I'm Jeffrey Grant, planner. My evidence in chief addresses the low density residential rezoning of the land sought by this submission, and I consider that the effects on the environment of the proposed rezoning in section 32 of part 2 of the Act, and I briefly summarise my views as follows. Firstly, effects on the environment. Although there was a potential positive effect from the contribution the rezoning could make to the housing needs of the district, from the LDR zoning in this location and the access road to it. Sorry, the LDR zoning in this location, the access road, would have high or significant adverse effects on the landscape values of the ONL and on the rural amenity values of Lake Johnston and its environs, and would foreclose the opportunity for Lake Johnston, its margins and its wider naturalness, to be an undeveloped and remote getaway close to the urban settlement areas of Queenstown and Franklin, and the adverse effects outweighing the positive effects of the zoning, in my view. I just, there I've said high or significant. Mr. Skelton used the term high for adverse effects, and Dr. Reed used the term significant, so I can try to distinguish between them, just high or significant. Section 32, in my evidence in chief, I assess the rezoning proposal using the principles that the council planning witnesses use in their assessments. The key conclusion from my assessment is that urban development within this landscape would directly contravene various high-order objectives and policies of the proposed plan as follows. Firstly, the rezoning does not achieve the relevant strategic direction objectives and policies for the strategic and integrated management of urban growth, because urban development in this location could not be said to be consistent with a compact and integrated urban form. It would not protect the rural landscape from sporadic sprawling and inappropriate development. And this location in the ONL and in a sensitive location adjacent to Lake Johnston does not have potential to absorb change without significant detraction from the landscape and visual amenity values. Secondly, the rezoning is not consistent with the higher order objectives and policies for urban development, because urban development cannot be undertaken in a manner that protects the ONL and the rural amenity. It is not contained in an existing settlement, it is a new urban location, and it would not avoid sporadic urban development that would adversely affect the natural environment, rural amenity, or landscape values. And thirdly, the rezoning is not consistent with the higher order landscape provisions, because the ONL would not be protected from the adverse effects of subdivision use and development. It would not be consistent with discouraging urban subdivision and development in the rural zones. It would not avoid impinging on the ONL and would not minimise degradation of the open ONL landscape. And high quality undeveloped lake environments in the basin are a final resource which should be sustained. All of those words through A, B and C there are all in those higher order objectives and policies. Part 2. I agree with Mr. Skelton's and Dr. Reed's opinion that the LDR zone would have very high or significant adverse effects on ONL values, and therefore the subdivision use and development enabled by the zoning would be inappropriate under Section 6B. I don't consider that the urbanisation of ONL land is an efficient use of the district's resources, given that there are other rural locations that could better absorb urban development without adversely affecting ONLs. In Section 7B, the urban development of the land would not maintain and enhance the amenity values or the quality of the environment of Lake Johnston and its wider context, and that's Section 7C and F. Under Section 5, new LDR zoning for a system provided for well-being by meeting in part the housing needs of the district, but would not assist the district in sustaining the ONL's role in meeting the reasonably foreseeable needs of future generations, given that the natural splendour of the district is a prime driver of the district's popularity as a place to live and visit. For these reasons, in my view, the LDR zoning does not achieve the purpose of its business yet. Thank you.
In paragraph 9, you said, given that there are other rural locations that speak of more than the
interaction. Sorry, I beg your pardon.
Paragraph 9?
Yes.
Where are those other rural locations in your opinion?
Well, there's I wouldn't have thought that Ladies Mile on the Upper Edge was one of those, but it probably will be now. There's land around Morven Ferry on the lower slopes, which is all currently visual amenity landscape. There's land north of Morven Ferry between the State Highway through to the Hills Golf Course area. That's all visual amenity landscape. Various other pockets. But again, I come back to compact urban form where linkages of public transport and gradation of densities and the diversity of typologies, linkages with commercial zones, walkability and so on, hard to achieve when everything's sort of scattered around the show. So I'd be thinking also about intensification of current urban areas. For example, around all the old Plan Change 50 area where there's a whole lot more height enabled. That is all above the town.
Yes, off you go.
My own copy book, he doesn't take it in London. Did you have a chance to look at the work by Osborne and his son?
I didn't look at those, but I did refer to the council's evidence on that. There was some evidence by Craig Barr and just a moment.
That must have been Spring 12.
Yes, it was. It's already, they've already been in front of you where their evaluation under the MPS was that there was sufficient capacity already, as I recall, in both the Queenstown catchments and the Wanaka catchments. That's true, isn't it? Yeah. So I had referred to those, the council statements on those matters. All of that area is going to be subject to the Waikato Basin study, and therefore would be up for some submission.
In terms of what you said about that compacted integrated, it'd be fairly isolated little patches.
Well, it depends on what it is, because if it's a continuation of the rural lifestyle or rural residential zoning, that is already there up around. Hanson Road and Tucker Beach Road, then that might be alright for the rural type living.
But not at an LDR?
I wouldn't have thought so at LDR because of those reasons that
in terms of the higher order?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that concludes the case for Oasis this afternoon. I don't think it requires the system closing or closing. I think the evidence rather speaks for itself in this instance. And so if the Commission has no further questions, that's all we have for Oasis.
Thank you very much. Through the usual until Monday, 22nd, 10 a.m.